Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Axiata Group's second quarter 2013 results briefing. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. At which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Dr. Sri Jamaludin. Thank you, sir. Please go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the second quarter results announcement. Glad to be with you all again. If you can go straight to the presentation, slide two. As you can see from the performance, and also from the slide, that we have a reasonably strong Q-on-Q sequential growth, aided by the modest performance improvement at XL. As you can see from the slide, year-to-date growth for first half was 5.2%, EBITDA -23.2%, PAT -2.2%. The Q-on-Q has been revenue of 3.3%, EBITDA 4.7%, and PAT 4.7%. If you look at the results at constant currency, roughly the difference for year-to-date and year-on-year is around 2 percentage points. As you can see, with constant currency, the underlying results of the countries have been quite good on the revenue side, 7.8% revenue growth, EBITDA flat, more or less flat, and PAT -1%. Annualized ROIC about 10.7% and ROCE about 8.6%. As you know, we are declaring an interim tax-exempt dividend under Single Tier system of 0.08 per share. Moving on to the next slide. Celcom announced the launch of Escape. This is an OTT play. We can discuss later in more detail. It will be launched, actually, we have announced, but it will be launched actually 1st September. This will be the starting point for us to provide range of TV and movie services to our customers primarily. Eventually, we'll be set to launch across the whole group to be developed by Escape and will be launched across the whole group. As you can see from the growth has been 4%, but if you exclude domestic roaming, meaning one of the MVNO parties who have moved across to the other side, the revenue growth would have been 7%. On XL, results improved because of this, both basic growth in revenue traction and a significant increase in our subscribers. The Q-on-Q sequential revenue improved by 5% because of that reason. It is a modest growth for the country, but for XL. Okay. Moving to slide four. I was told that the line has been not very clear, so I hope it's clear now. Moving to slide four. Okay. Just hang on a second. We have a slight problem with our system here. Give me a second. Let me move on. Just one second. Okay, I hope it's better now. Let me get feedback that it's okay. All right. Let me move on. Slide four. If you look at emerging markets, especially Dialog, Robi, and Smart, the performance has been more spectacular. I must say the word spectacular because you will see later on that every one of them has performed very well in almost every measurement. Dialog, for example, the revenue growth was 15% year-to-date, EBITDA 9% year-to-date, and data revenue grew 57%. Robi, there's a strong program development effect. The growth for revenue has been outstanding, 21%. EBITDA grew even much faster at 37%, and PAT more than doubled. Smart, full integration of Hello and Smart, we have delivered outstanding results, as can be seen. Revenue grew 38%, EBITDA much more than doubled, and data grew more than 100% too. I'll stop here for a while. I'll stop here and pass to James. If you can just bear with us for a while, we just want to get some feedback on the our sound system, whether it's clear or not. Just bear with us for a while.
Yeah, so we'll just give we pause for our talk and just want to fix the sound problem. If people can hear me okay, would somebody be able to send the text then? Please, can you send the text to, I think Calvin sent the text to Jennifer, so that'd be great, thank you. Okay, so it seems to be getting better, so that's good. On slide 5, the key, there's a few points to note about our 1-8 performance in particular. Firstly, we've been talking with you all quite a lot about the Excel competitive issues. And there's no doubt that the competition is proving to be extremely tough. So on this P&L, if you were to extract out the Excel EBITDA in 1H, so you're left with the other opcos in corporate center, Alpiata, our EBITDA growth in fact has been 11.3% year on year for 1H. We have an overperformance blended across the other opcos. Clearly, the Robbie growth rate, even our growth rate at 37%, is fairly outstanding, driven in part by the syntax reduction, but the performance is smart, and also dialogue has been pretty good and ahead of plan. The other point to note in this chart is that the CapEx spend rate in 1H was down, compared to our full year target. So the accretion rate of Tami was a bit higher. So you'll notice that the dividend at 8 cents is a little bit behind the Tami accretion rate, but we do expect that to slow down a bit in 2H because we're not moving off our CapEx target. The depreciation will be a wee bit higher in 2H compared to 1H. Over the page, what we're trying to do on this slide to some task is just show where the main drivers to revenue growth are. You'll notice that there's a big blob of 142 categorized as others. So we have had a bit of a kicker in handset sales. I'm sure Chari and the Telcom team can describe what's behind that in the Q&A. But handset sales in that 88 million number. So just beneath the 142, you'll see 88. So that's made up from 37 million of handset sales. The USP in H2 was 32 million, and then there's additional transmission costs or transmission lease revenue of 5 million. The dialogue 14 million on that chart comes from the global wholesale business, which saw a bit of an upturn in growth. The other point to note on the SMS revenue, Telcom SMS revenue, is down quite considerably, but data growth rate remains strong, and we can get into a bit of detail on that later as well. Over the page on slide 7, we've got our EBITDA bridge, and obviously this is the graphical illustration of the point I made earlier to show that the Excel year-on-year impact in EBITDA is translating to a very significant reduction in our overall EBITDA growth rate. But what you can see in this chart is that $47 million of smart growth is now pretty material with the group total. And in fact, Robbie at $91 million is contributing more growth in EBITDA than Telcom. But we're obviously very pleased that Telcom at 4% EBITDA growth is tracking revenue growth, which is a great result. But it does show that the balance of growth drivers in the business is changing a bit and becoming more material from the non-big opco sources. Slide 8 is our CAT bridge. Just a couple of points to note on that. In the 160 operations block, so the big red block on operations, that is made up from mainly Excel, which actually accounts for $304 million of that, from which $350 million is EBITDA. Negative EBITDA is the EBITDA reduction that I referred to in the previous chart, which is mainly, or very significantly, the higher interconnect cost, partly because of the SMS interconnect on a year-on-year comparative basis. Because that kicks in Q3 last year, in fact, by the time we get to Q4 this year, then we'll lose that comparator. Because we've been talking about this same issue clearly for the last few quarters. And then network costs are higher at $34 million, which is obviously driven around the higher coverage over the last rolled out over the last few quarters. And depreciation is higher at Excel as well, to the tune of $38 million on a year-on-year basis.
For the delay, hopefully you can hear me better now. So we're expecting some text if that indeed is the case. I managed to get to slide 8. If anybody's got any queries about the first few slides, because I made quite a few important points, then please bring them up again at the Q&A. But on slide 8, I just got to the point that on the operational bridge that takes us from the normalized 2012 position to the normalized 2013 position, we've got $160 million of underlying operational weakening, and the main driver for that is clearly Excel, which accounts for $300 million. Of that, of which $175 million is on the interconnect costs, which is the SMS interconnect that we've been referring to now for nearly a year. That will fall away as a year-on-year comparator in Q4 because it kicked in Q3 2012. We've obviously got higher depreciation costs as well at Excel of $38 million, which mirror the aggressive rollout of the last couple of years. That $300 million number is offset by a higher PAT coming to Robbie of 64 million ringgit and Smart of 40 million ringgit. So the net result is 160 million ringgit that you can see there in the red box. The next slide, only one point to make about that. Clearly we've got quite considerable growth in subs to Idea. That's down the performance there. But the main point is that Excel sub growth for the last four quarters is 12 million. See, from the low point, 42 million in 2012. That initial reduction erodes from price increases, and then the increase, had the increase since then has been attributable to a bit of a price change in terms of price reduction across different product areas. So we've now got a 64 million subscriber number XL. Slide 10, a few points to note on this slide. Clearly, the headline number of voice and SMS as a percent of total has not changed that much. 0.6 percentage points down on voice and 1.4 on SMS, which is a little bit faster, mainly because of Cellcom and XL reduction in SMS revenue. Voice, Cellcom is reasonably stable. So if you look at the voice number, within that is minus 0.9% year-on-year of voice revenue at Cellcom. XL is down 14% for some of the reasons that we've given earlier, price reductions being the main driver, and I'm sure Adlan can answer queries on that. Dialogue is up 8% and voice, Robbie up 23%, and Smart up a whopping 153%. By comparison, SMS is down 9% at Cellcom, XL down 8%, Dialog up 9%, Robbie up 62%, and Smart up 500%. So we've got some quite big swings within that number, despite the fact the overall number looks pretty stable. And then data, just read the numbers very quickly. The Cellcom data growth number was 15%, XL 3% year-on-year, that's just for Q2, Dialog 65% and Robbie 42%. And Smart, Smart number is so big, I'll read it out anyway, 1,576%. That's obviously a function of that, it's starting from a very low base, but data is taking on in Cambodia very quickly, so that is an interesting point. Slide 11 shows our CapEx number. So you can see that we are down, we're roughly 21% CapEx intensity H1, which is tracking below our 25% guidance, but we are holding to our guidance nevertheless, because we would expect to see the CapEx ramping up a bit. The numbers are turning around a wee bit XL, so we're hoping to see that traction coming through, the CapEx number is clearly just a function of historic invoices coming through, so there is a bit of a time lag, because the overall commitment rate to XL has come off significantly in the last few months, and we're tracking about $600 million of commitment for 2013, as Adlan, I'm sure, can enlarge upon later. Slide 12 is the overall balance sheet, and as you can see, our gross debt EBITDA is now at 1.89, which is up a wee bit. So the main driver on debt increases across the group is XL debt being contained across other markets, with the exception of Dialog, where we have raised a little bit more external debt very recently. So Dialog debt will increase a bit over the next few months. Cash balances stable at 6.6 billion, stable both dividend and final dividend in Q2. So that resulted in that drop, but the underlying operating cash flows have been slightly up year on year, driven by the reduction in CapEx spend rate. So overall, I think our balance sheet is in a pretty healthy state, and our S&P position continues to be BBB with a positive outlook. So S&P are looking at a possible upgrade, Moody's were stable at Baa2. In terms of the guidance, Before I talk about the guys, I just wanted to point out one thing very quickly, which is in Forex. So actually put it back into the appendix. It's in slide 20. Interestingly, you can see that we've made some gains in the quarter on TACA. So ringgit versus TACA is up 4.5%. That's for the year, and 1.1% for quarter on quarter. So I think the Bangladesh government is supporting TACA to an extent, but also garments influence forex influence in garments sector are quite strong, growing quite quickly. So that is supporting TACA nicely. Clearly, the biggest movement is in the rupiah. We've reduced down our dollar debt exposure to very minimal in Indonesia now, and so the main exposure operationally is on CapEx in Indonesia. But in other markets, we have less of an exposure just because our CapEx spend is a lot less. But also in Malaysia, we do generally do ringgit deals with our suppliers, so we don't have a bigger dollar exposure in Indonesia itself. But we are continuing to take forex hits on a translation basis in the way that Dato' Jamal described right at the start of this call. So slide 13 shows that our guidance is in line. We have a reasonable degree of confidence that we can hit the EBITDA growth target, but that's the one that we are more nervous about. Revenue growth should be okay, okay, and CapEx, CapEx may be under some pressure from a currency perspective, but from a constant currency perspective, we're online to hit that 4.5 billion number. I should point out that all these numbers are on a constant currency basis. So, with Forex, then there is some risk to these numbers. Okay, I'll hand back to Dato' Jamal now.
Yeah, with that, let's do a Q&A straight away.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel the request, please press the pound or hash key. Our first question comes from the line of Louis Hulado, HSBC Singapore. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for the call and congrats on the results. I had three questions. The first was if we could get some update in terms of the Indonesia competitive situation, particularly with Hutch Indonesia. Have they, and even with the other two operators, whether XL's move to cut voice and SMS tariffs, whether there's been any reaction to that, and on the wireless data side with Hutch. The second question is, I saw in the notes to the presentation that there's a potential capital call for IDEA in the third quarter. Just wondering where you're leaning to in terms of whether you're going to exercise that, and if you do, how would you finance this? And last question is quite a bit of news flow about the potential power IPO for the group. Could you give us any guidance in terms of timing and outline, and whether it has any impact in terms of XL's potential acquisition of Axis?
Thanks, Sukhan. Also, the first question is on the competitive environment in Indonesia. Generally, I would say that actually things have been pretty stable for most of the year, and definitely for the second quarter. And stable should not be translated to top competitive. Yeah? Stable in terms of, let's say, at least not irrational competition. Clearly, competitive pressure and competitive risk remain. I think we have made reference in our last conference call that we need to find the right balance between building up for nothing as well as not compromising on our relative position. So I think we managed to do that in the second quarter. I think another sign which is essentially positive is that, let's say looking at the top three operators who have now all announced their results, you see that everyone is growing. So that in itself, I think, indicates that industry is relatively okay. This time, I think we did a bit better than others, but probably we also had a bit of homework to do to compensate for some of the weaker quarters last year. We are probably, let's say, in the market which is competitive, there are at the moment now maybe as good as where you can get. Anything else would probably become too cozy, I would say, like what you see potentially in other markets in the region. So things have been pretty positive. The good thing is also that we also see less and less of the smaller operators, in particular HUD. I think if you look at competition, in essence, is tapering out. They seem to be losing a little bit of team, which I think is in line that we see that where they're living in the longer term, because we also believe that what they did in the past is also not really sustainable, and essentially at the EBITDA line, I think they are building quite aggressively. So what they have been continued to be aggressive at the trade level, I think from a price point perspective, you've seen that it has stabilized, and I think overall competition actually has been could not be better than what it is today.
Okay, thank you. Maybe I should put the perspective before we go to the second and third question on Excel. I think to reiterate what James mentioned, if you look at our results for the year-to-date results, without Excel, the group actually revenue grew 11.5%, EBITDA 11.3%, and PATAMI 24%. Meaning, it's not good or bad, but just to put into perspective, the result of the group minus Excel have been, I would say, the most spectacular. Now, like I said, it doesn't mean good or bad, just to show that if we focus on a performance on Excel, then, you know, that will clearly change the whole scenario quite considerably. And looking at Excel, as, you know, we alluded by Adnan, of course, this one is for the last 3 quarters, one aspect competition, one aspect internal. We have resolved one of internal fighting, packaging that within our control. So that's giving us a modest improvement over the last last 1 quarter. So that the traction has been pretty quite encouraging. But the only variable left is the competition, which is in general intense, but it's not worse off than where we are for the last few quarters. So I think net, the point I want to make is that the results of the group are very good. In fact, I will get to spectacular minus Excel. And what you can see, if Excel improves, which you can see is improving, we will have a very good trajectory moving forward in the future. Now, it takes some time for it to recover fully, but the trajectory has been quite encouraging. Let me talk to James to answer the second question on IDEA.
So you'll notice the IDEA announcement at their Q1, which was a few weeks ago now. Whilst we are not a QIP, which means a qualified institutional investor, you know, placement investor, we do nevertheless have anti-dilution provisions, and so we will have an opportunity to invest should we wish to. So we still are some way from deciding whether or not we will actually make that decision. And then I think the third question was, there was some press earlier this week on potential tower IPO. What we're doing is trying to increase the focus on passive management. We've concentrated on building up color issues in our tower division, especially in Indonesia and in Sri Lanka over the last few years. In fact, that's gone very well. Any decision to spin out or IPO has not been made, so we are continuing to increase the focus on passive management. and improve that performance, but nevertheless, we're not making a decision about any sort of organizational changes in a structural sense.
And there's one follow-up to that, is that does it have any impact at all in terms of the potential acquisition of Axis by Excel? In short, is it needed to fund an acquisition if you decide to do that?
Could you repeat the question? We are struggling a bit.
Is the tower IPO required, for example, to as part of funding for a acquisition by Excel of Axis in Indonesia, or it's completely separate?
So I think the question was, how are we planning to fund an acquisition in Indonesia? Is that right?
Yes. Would you require for example, do you need to give funding to Excel to acquire Axis in Indonesia? Would you need to have the tower IPO of the group happen, or it's a completely separate transaction?
I think there have been a number of leaks in Indonesia, but there is no announcement. So I'll hand over to Adlan or Sathya to make a comment on that.
Essentially, I think we have been hearing a lot of news in the press on the deal. Today there's still no new signs on it, because in theory we would have actually made an announcement. So it's a bit premature to talk about the pre-funding, how we're going to do that, unless we have actually finalized in terms of the evaluation, the structure of the deal and that, right? So obviously, if I look at generally where is the fund the additional funds to software, it could be a it could be bad, it could be right, it could be a tax commission. Obviously, if you look at where we are in terms of gearing, we are still at a comfortable level. No doubt, I think if we were to fund transaction through debt, for example, gearing seems to be a bit high. But frankly, we do have other options, for example, that we can do in collaboration with our parent company as well as they build out to the market. But it's a bit premature to really pin down and get a discussion until we actually finalize the deal.
And if I can reiterate, we are on active. At the moment, we are sitting on yes, and of course we have to announce, but obviously because we have not announced, obviously we have some way to go. And maybe a long way to go. But I want to decouple that with the news of Tower and Tower IPO. In the first place, Indonesia, as you all know, even if you want to, it's not easy to do that because of the regulatory rules with regards to Telco. They have to be 100% by someone else, and they're not prepared to allow third parties to 100% in the first place. So I reiterate what James mentioned, our focus on Tower is operational efficiency. We separate a deal with a strong focus on different management team. That's all we are doing right now. So we have to decouple the two. And I think there was you were trying to link the news on Tower, which was speculative in the press this week, to Indonesian acquisition, and just to reiterate that point as well, there's no linkage.
Okay, great.
So just to confirm that.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes from the line of Roshan Raj, Merrill Lynch. Please ask your question.
Hi, thanks for the call. Three questions on Celcom. One on the group level KPI. On Celcom, the ARPU, the first question, it has been stable quarter on quarter, but it is still down year on year. Any additional color you can share and comments on top of what you had already said in 1Q? The second question is on the launch of your OTT app or your application. What is it, what is going to be its key appeal, and what kind of impact do you see from this launch? And the third question is network and sales and marketing costs. They have trended down this quarter. What is the expected outlook for these two cost items for the remainder of this year and maybe slightly longer term?
Okay, so your first question was on the color for RPU, 37 versus 36 margin reduction, and for postpaid it is 90 to 88, and these are normal. And we are, if you consider the trend reduction of about 1 to 2 ringgit every quarter as we acquire additional newer customer, lower ARPU, this will keep gradually coming down. That's all. So if you want to see the color, it's probably marginal reduction, but nothing drastic. We're not doing anything to go drive this down. So we have, the whole market is still fortunately rational, so it will remain as it. That's the first question.
It's a bit unclear. So just to reconfirm, the ARPU decline is because the incremental subscriber is a lower ARPU subscriber, but there's no impact from competition. Why is there not any uptick in terms of incremental data usage is my question on that, or it's the net impact which is really showing up in these ARPU trends?
The voice revenue overall, as well as the SMS revenue overall, is expected to come down, as you all know. And what we have done is so far to manage reduction of voice revenue coming down using the voice resuscitation program. On the SMS, the voice reduction is happening. The SMS quarter on quarter has come down, as you know. And this is to be compensated by data. And we are focused on small screen. Big screen is again coming down. We are very focused on mobile internet, which is a small screen. But the reduction in SMS and voice is not going to compensate it by only 50. The other area where we are focusing also is on value-added services. We have announced a program with Huawei to go and drive the last revenue off, and that's also going to help. So essentially, there are two businesses to minus. Looking at the overall trend, maybe either flat or marginal reduction is expected. One and a half ringgit every quarter is expected.
Okay. Maybe, sorry, I can elaborate. If you look at the subscribers, if you look at ARPU, obviously on year-to-date basis, it reduced by 7% negative. So the question is whether it's because of new subscribers or because of other reasons. Now, as Jerry mentioned, it's more because of the new subscribers having a lower ARPU. So to be able to understand that, if you look at the blended RPM, actually it has increased. MOU also year-to-date has increased. Subscribers increased by 8%. So that kind of diluted the ARPU. So in this way, in this regard, it's quite a positive move. So it's less of price or competition, it's more of additional subscribers than we had that last quarter or two.
Thank you. The second question is around Escape and the impact of Escape. Now, the Escape launch was extremely well received by the Malaysian market in terms of the fact that we as a service provider in a position to get into this market and do well. There are certain features that we are offering, like pause and pay and all the stuff. Nobody else has it. This has been extremely well received. We are also receiving interest from third parties to see whether we can work together with you and all that.
there was an announcement made even by Rabasi Shazali, who is our CEO, to say that AirAsia is interested in working with that kind of stuff. So I think what is important at this point in time is to make sure that people come in, start using it, and drive the awareness substantially. And then over a period of time, we can go and monetize it. But initially, from a revenue perspective, it is not going to be significant. Right. And when we launched OTT, that was not the intent. The intent is to make sure that we are into getting into this new business. We are in a position to go and launch. And this is a huge platform that we launched within a matter of about a year. In some countries, and some people have taken about 2 or 3 years. And the fact that we've launched it well and then accepted by the public is a big reason to make them.
I want to add on the SK. Before it was anticipated, as are we going full blown quad play? The answer is no, we are not. At the same time, are we into providing more and more services beyond communication? The answer is yes. So essentially, what we're trying to do is to provide additional services to our customers as an added feature, and providing them choices and to be able to increase our share of wallet. That's intention. Therefore, we have decided to do a significantly low-cost approach, which is an OTT base, and to be able to provide services without necessarily having to spend a huge infrastructure to provide that services. So therefore, the investment will be more modest than you would have been otherwise. In the long run, the cost structure will be further shared across the whole group to make it even more efficient eventually.
I just wanted to make one other quick
comment as well on the ARPU question, which I think is a really interesting data point. And that is, Roshan, despite the fact, as you know, our data growth is 16%, our data ARPU is absolutely flat across 5 quarters. So it's roughly 60 ringgit if you are 5 quarters. And I think that's a very telling result, because it shows that there's a lot of price discipline in that telecom that continues to be maintained.
So another question is about network costs and marketing cost outlook. As far as network costs are concerned, I think at this point in time we're looking at about 10 to plus or minus 0.2, 0.3 is what we're looking at. Now, what we're trying to do is, from a long-term, mid-term, medium-term to long-term perspective, is to drive costs structurally here, the lead cost network or the right cost network initiatives have already started to, we started some work around LPN. You'll correct it a little more from probably that amount later in terms of what LPN is all about. So there are initiatives we are taking, which will drive costs structurally down, and that is the intent. Over a period of time, we want to sort of bring these costs down. Even in the case of fiber, the work that we're doing with Acer, Digi, or Telecom Malaysia is going to probably drive that cost down further. In terms of tower, again, we've been talking about tower cost reduction. So this should only be coming down gradually. Right? And as far as marketing cost is concerned, for the last 5 years, what we've done is we've looked at the numbers, we've seen that marketing cost as a percentage of revenue has been coming down. Now, fundamentally, what we're trying to do is to sort of get the same mileage by changing the mix. So we've been spending a lot of money in TV, for example, or newspaper. What we're trying to do is sort of take the money out and put it into media. So social media, so essentially the mix change is driving the same kind of impact that we have in terms of marketing output, but at the same time, making sure that the overall cost is lower as a percentage of revenue. And this, we've been doing it for the last 4 to 5 years. Now, one more important thing that we're doing, which is pretty interesting, is this project Zoom, where we are looking at 144 districts and who they are, what they are,
at one point in time, we used to send, let's say, for example, a Chinese banner all across every nook and corner. We probably send those Chinese banners, and today what they're saying is, Chinese segment that we want to go out for, the banners in China will only go to those districts and not to anybody and everybody. So I think we are getting a little smarter in terms of, you know, how we are spending the money. And so that's why when the mix changes, the percentage of revenue, the marketing expenses, the percentage of revenue is also gradually coming down. So that will continue to be lower, but it does not mean that we are spending less on marketing. That's the one message that we want to leave you with.
Okay, thanks all for the detailed explanation. Just one question for the group level. This is just to confirm. So as of now, you are retaining the KPIs for the full year, but you possibly think there could be some downside risk to the EBITDA growth outlook.
So the point that we made was on a constant currency basis, we're looking okay. Obviously, with the volatility in the Forex currently happening, then we have a lack of confidence in the outlook from a local currency, you know, an actual basis.
Okay. Thanks a lot, James.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes from the line of Arthur Pineda from Citigroup. Please ask your question.
Hi, thank you for the call. Several questions for me. Firstly, on SMS, can you elaborate on the SMS softness that you've seen in Malaysia? Is this purely due to OTT? And would you see this spill over to the other markets as well? Second question I had is in Bangladesh. Can you please elaborate on the 3G licensing there? What the time period is? What kind of price floors are you seeing, and what kind of build-out requirements will be imposed by the government? Third question I had is with regard to the towers. I know that Louis asked it earlier. What's the motivating factor for you to execute a deal, especially if you're already quite under-leveraged at just one time debt to EBITDA? What can you do with the proceeds? Thank you. Hello. Yeah.
We couldn't hear the questions actually. If you don't mind repeating them.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I guess somehow we all have.
Okay. I'll repeat all three. Okay. Firstly, on the SMS side, can you please elaborate on the SMS softness that you've seen in Malaysia? Is this purely due to OTT, and is there a risk that this could spread to your other markets? Second question I had is with regard to 3G licensing in Bangladesh. If you could give us an update in terms of when this will happen, what kind of pricing can we potentially see, and what kind of build-out will be required. And the last question I had is with regard to the tower spin-off. I know that this is still preliminary, but I was just wondering what your motivations are for spinning off an asset, especially given that you are seemingly under leverage already at 1x debt to EBITDA. What can you do with the proceeds? Thank you.
Okay. The first question, whether the question is SMS going down because of OTT? Clearly, we are. We are seeing that, especially with WhatsApp coming into, we are seeing a huge amount of traffic coming out of WhatsApp, which is probably dropping a little bit in terms of SMS revenue. Quarter on the first half, it has come down to about 8.3%, and between two quarters, it came down by about 1.9%. So clearly, we are seeing the reduction, and we're also seeing substantial increase in WhatsApp volume. Now, to address this, what we're trying to do is to come out with a sachet pricing for WhatsApp alone, for example. So one day WhatsApp, you pay me 3 ringgit, 4 ringgit. And this is exactly what we've been talking about for a while also, in terms of how we want to go on prices so that we can go monetize. So the current packet code is capable of doing it, so we've come out with some packages to go and monetize even WhatsApp. So I think we don't want to lie down and take this. We want to see if we can capitalize it.
But even on the SMS side, we want to try a few other items like skipped SMS, super SMS, etc. to go and drive the market trend as well as the usage pattern. It will keep continuing. It will continue to come down, and we want to see if we can address that.
Okay, thank you.
The question was on the 3G auction process in Bangladesh. Not much to say about that other than the fact that the first preliminary stage is taking place now with the big money going in. The timing, I think, is still looking like the auction itself for first stage of the auction. So we'll update you as and when we get news on that. And then I think the third question was on the tower spin-off. And I think your question really was around the logic of letting go of a core asset. I heard something about leverage in there, but I didn't quite hear the totality of your question. I mean, just from the market perspective, what's trying to do, if you, as we said earlier, just get the focus on things like energy management and asset management generally, through creating this SBU structure that Dr. Jamal referred to, that has tremendous value on its own. We don't feel that we should talk about any further any sort of structural activity because no decisions have been made around that for the time being. Did I hit the correct the point, or were you making another point in terms?
Well, the point I was asking on leverage is that what effectively would you do with the proceeds, assuming you do go through a divestment process, because you do seem to be highly under leveraged at this stage.
The question? Can you repeat the question?
Sorry, in terms of what can you do with the proceeds, because at this stage your balance sheet is already, I think, fairly under leveraged. So if you were to proceed with such an action, is there anything that you are looking at? Is it an acquisition? Is it more balance sheet management?
Our leverage position is about buying on target. I mean, some commentators suggest that we're under leveraged, but if you think about it in terms of the way the rating agencies have shifted over the last 3 years, they are now very focused on growth debt to EBITDA when they previously would give you credit for net debt. So despite that, our cash balance is quite high. They are looking at our gross debt. Our cash balances have come down a little less for the reason I gave earlier. We paid out the final dividend, and we are raising our debt a little bit in Indonesia. So what we're looking to do, if possible, is come up with a balance sheet optimization plan, which Adlan mentioned earlier, where we can perhaps utilize some of our cash resource in more expensive debt zones. To balance the debt and the cash out a bit, but we haven't made any firm decision on that yet.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. Our next question comes from the line of Prem Rajasingham, Macquarie. Please ask your question.
Good evening. Just one question from me, and that is, given the subsidies that were given out by the government earlier this year for handsets, have you seen any significant change in trend with regards to data, especially in the prepaid segment, which, you know, where we've potentially been missing some of the growth in data? Could you talk about the trends you're seeing on that front and where the upside for data, especially amongst prepaid customers, will come from?
Good question. First thing is to answer your question, we have about 30,000 people who have utilized the government subsidy of 200. I mean, we were a little slow initially for a specific reason, because the MCMC conditions around collecting the money was a little difficult initially, but subsequently after we escalated it, they made it a little easy. So especially last quarter, we have pushed heavily, and clearly we are seeing increased uptake. Now, overall, between last quarter and this quarter, the smartphone penetration within our base has gone from 23.6 to 27.5. And it's probably the highest within the industry in terms of growth. So clearly, yeah, it is definitely useful in terms of going into that. But see, the only thing is this, that the more smartphones that you have on the line, you can get data revenue up, definitely. But it will have a bit of an impact, a bit of cannibalization on the SMS revenue. So it has to be balanced in a way that net net is positive than negative. Okay.
But on that note, do you think that the profitability of, you know, as you increase the volume of data usage, do you think that you'll get the economy scale and therefore we should not be talking about margin pressure as data usage goes up?
I think Telkom is fortunate, and then further off from there, I think this is also driven very heavily by our chairman as well as James. So we've done some data profitability analysis within the, fundamentally what we are running today at about 30 to 31% in terms of overall data profitability. Now, capacity utilization, so the more we put them on data, the better it is in terms of going and driving. But if I want to go and increase the data possibility, obviously we need to go and drive more capacity. So this is good for us in a way. And overall price points within Malaysia will also drive profitability. And again, fortunately, so far we don't have any irrational price points coming from the market.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes from the line of Naraja Natarajan from Nomura. Please ask your question.
Hi guys, thanks for the opportunity. Sorry, I didn't fully catch this question on data profitability. I just want to understand, because it seems that we are seeing some SMS cannibalization, but overall margins at Celcom seem to have held resiliently this year and even last year when voice was seeing some impact. So overall, I mean, the whole idea that data is not profitable, that doesn't seem to be applying so much for Malaysia. Is that right? Can you confirm that? That's the first thing. And secondly, in XL, I just want to understand, given that the coverage has picked up very significantly, are we trying to match the market leader here? And secondly, how's the brand perception improved on the data offerings with this new coverage that we have?
John, I'll just get going with the Celcom question and before I hand over to Terry. As we said earlier, the margin maintenance at 4% growth, 44% is a great result, despite the fact that, clearly we're seeing SMS fall off. So the main driver behind that, as Terry just alluded in the last question, is actually data profitability, which is coming up quite nicely. Overall data profitability is held back a bit by broadband, which is down in the high teens. So from a small and mid-screen perspective, we're pretty pleased with the way in which it's headed, and despite that, utilization rates are still quite low. There is a bit of upside there. So, Chari, do you want to enlarge on that a bit?
I think James, you covered them all well, but fundamentally, I just want to add one more point. that in terms of increasing the profitability, we've taken a number of actions for a while. In fact, in one of the analyst conference, we also presented in terms of what we're going to do. Essentially, driven towards increasing data volume, especially on the smaller screen. This is where the possibility is. So the mobile internet piece is going to be extremely important for us. Moving the usage commitment upwards, a fair amount of upselling happens the minute they reach closer to their max, which is either 3 gig or 5 gig, we go and do an upselling. And the sachet pricing is also an important piece for us to go and drive, especially roamers who are coming in to go and drive data utilization. So capacity utilization is important for us. The project Zoom is helping us in terms of where we keep the capacity fully utilized or not. And so today we are talking about even dynamic pricing or differentiated pricing depending on usage. So I think there's a fair amount of focus in terms of driving profitability for data. We can't take the IA off this. Now, one more thing that we have done well with Access has not done or Digi has not done is around Wi-Fi, you know, putting a Wi-Fi in a car. This has taken off really well. The good partnership began between Huawei and us, which is driving a fair amount of traffic into us in terms of, if we look at Total Wi-Fi, it is still a dongle, Wi-Fi dongle, but it doesn't consume as much as a normal dongle which you use in a PC. If you're using it only when you're traveling, so the utilization is less, the yield is much better in a Total Wi-Fi. So those are a few things that you do to drive profitability up.
And then, Adnan's going to tackle the next question.
Just on the where you are, like 2007, I think first thing is, I think you can appreciate the fact that I think both of us have got the first lot of learning at 3G, right? That also is really doing for coverage, a really thin layer in terms of capacity. We are a bit more focused in terms of our approach, right? Going into key markets, key cities, for example, and really in cities that we are present, we'll try and ensure that we also build some transport to make sure that people have good experience when they use our services. So, in fact, I think we started on the infrastructure investing only our 3G network in 3G market, and that was a decision we made because we said that we wanted to be ahead of time. And essentially, I think now we do have the capacity, the key for us now is actually to load up capacity that we have actually built. Essentially, I think this year, you can see Telkomsel is actually ramping up in terms of their rollout. They are rolling at the same pace that we were doing last year. I don't think the question is, we are not in a race, for example, with Telkomsel, who has the biggest coverage and all that. But essentially, I think we are trying to strike a balance of, let's say, expanding our network at the same time, loading up the capacity that we've actually built. So, Telkomsel is going to continue, but I think ours is going to be PVC, a very good traction. For example, we may accelerate in certain of the cities that we see potential, but essentially it's not a game that we are after trying to match Telkomsel for coverage.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jin Han Chi from DBS Vickers. Please ask your question.
Hi, thanks so much for the call. A few questions from me. First one would be, I'm sure you've also heard about DSD, which may come into play in 2015. Wondering how this would actually affect the current prepaid service tax of 6%, how this actually affects the cost environment for Celcom. Just wondering what your thoughts are on that. Secondly, would be, could you remind us what Celcom's 4G LTE coverage targets or aspirations are, maybe 1 year or even the next 2-3 years? My last question would be, in terms of, could you just elaborate a little bit on Dialog Axiata's competitive environment, especially in terms of pricing pressure?
the first question is around GST 2015. How will it affect telecom? See, today we are absorbing the 6% service tax of all. I think we are collectively taking it up one more time with the minister and other directions over to see whether we can start charging. So that discussion is going on. We should be able to secure something hopefully by the end of this year. So that the discussions are still going on. But once GST comes in, so this GST is value-added GST, so obviously this will be beneficial to us. This will be beneficial for industry as a whole. Overall, especially for large companies like us, the overall cost will come down, both for CapEx acquisitions as well as for OpEx. So it will be very positive for us if it gets implemented. The second question is around telecom 4G LTE coverage. We have a board approval to go and put in about 1,200 sites by June next year. Now, aspirations for 3 years and all of that, we've already submitted a planning paper to MCMC, and we have assisted the MCMC plan for deploying all those sites. And I leave the first question to James, please.
The competitive environment in Sri Lanka, we did allude to that in a comment earlier. The competitors on the whole are reasonably rational, with the exception of Mobitel, especially in the data space, but also in the voice space. Mobitel is the subsidiary of Sri Lanka Telecom, which is a fixed line there. The data price in Sri Lanka is now the cheapest, from what we can gather, almost anywhere around the world. So the data situation in Sri Lanka is tough. But other aspects of business are good. The average price per minute, from a dialogue perspective, is holding stable, which is good news. The other metrics are not too bad, with modest growth in margin. The BTV business, as I said earlier, is continuing to grow quite strongly, which is great news as well. So overall, the competitive situation not too bad, with the exception of the data space.
Oh, okay. Thanks so much for the detailed explanation.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes from the line of Calvin Goh from CIMB. Please ask your question.
Hi, my questions have been asked. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Roshan Raj from Merrill Lynch. Please ask your question.
Hi, just a follow-up question on the ARPU at Celcom. Just looking at the trends for the quarter, the subscriber count has actually gone down. Not sure why. There has been prepaid losses. Any color there will be good. But the service revenue is up, subscriber count is down, and ARPU is down as well, at least on a YY basis. So still kind of unclear as to why that should be the case. I recall you talking about new subscribers coming in at lower ARPU points, but with penetration levels at 140% plus levels, who are these new subscribers that you're getting on board? Some color there will be good. Thank you.
You need this one to answer.
Okay. Clearly, and there are specific areas where the new subscribers are coming in. And our X2 is the next version of X Factor. We had 3,762, about 3.7 million subscribers in Q1, and today we've got about 3.99. So, again, this is one area where it has gone up. The X2X has also gone up from 1.2 to 1.3. Which is the student community, and that's again a focus area for us. You know, one of the reasons why the ARPU is also coming down is because of success, which is our OTIF foreign market attack package. We had about 1.27 million subscribers in Q1. It's come down to about 1.1. And normally, the ARPU for the OTIF foreign worker, you know, is generally higher than normal. And so as this comes down and a few others who are with more ARPU, the average is slightly coming down. That's it.
Yeah, that's helpful. If I may ask one question on Robi, just trying to understand the ARPU uplift, both QOQ and YOY there. Is there anything as in one-off driving that trend, or are you seeing the market getting a bit more rational now?
Yeah, hi, Roshan. I think the Robi's cost structure is extremely competitive, and so one of the reasons that their EBITDA is growing is because they are managing their cost structure well, and also they've been filling in capacity in the regions outside Dhaka, Chittagong, and Camilla. So that's been adding possibility to the bottom line over the last 12 months in particular, which has gone well. The pricing situation is nevertheless quite tight. GP, the number one player, has upped the ante from about December or January this year in terms of pricing across Bangladesh. I think Robi is not price matching the public growth. They are continuing the traction, albeit at a slightly slower pace than before. But you know, it's generally heading in the right direction, as you can see from the results.
Sorry, just to clarify that, the competitive pricing point has gone down, but Robi has gone up. Is that the right inference?
Let's just clarify that. Before Fox and last year, and it's always been for some time, Robi's price is actually more competitive than the other two players. What happened is that recently, GP has been getting a more premium price, brought down the price quite considerably. Right, so but still slightly higher than Robi. So net, it's making the market more competitive. That's not the good news. But the good news is that it did not affect Robi much. And Robi is still doing very well. It affected the other competitor much more than Robi.
Okay, thanks. That's very helpful. Yes, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Rama Maruvada from Daiwa. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon. Just one question from me, please. Just trying to understand the impact of the currency volatility on your forex losses going forward, especially with regards to Robi and the Sri Lankan subsidiary Dialogue. On Robi, I see that it's a net cash business, so just wondering if you could comment on whether there would be any, is there any US dollar debt in that entity, and how the forex should evolve going forward?
Could you repeat the question? You didn't quite hear it properly.
Yeah, on Robi, I see that it's a net cash business. And just wondering, is there any US dollar debt in that business? And what would be the impact of forex volatility going forward on the exchange rate volatility on the forex losses going forward?
On slide 20, you can see that in fact we're taking some gains in the first half of the year in terms of ringgit taka. The previous 2 to 3 years of devaluation of the taka seems to stabilize, partly because of government intervention to an extent, but also quite considerably because of the forex remittances coming from garment sector and also overseas workers has improved significantly in the last year. The taka is okay from a forex perspective for the time being. Dialogue, we're seeing some volatility, a little bit of depreciation. As I mentioned before, we are taking some hits on a translation basis on consolidation, and we are seeking to protect our dollar exposure as best we can, although it's not very easy to pass this dollar forward for regulatory reasons, so we're seeking to cover our exposure in other ways where we can.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. There is no further question at this time. We will now pass the call back to Dr. Sri. Please continue, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. I really sincerely apologize for the quality of the voice network. In the days of 3 LTE and high definition, we seem to be going back to 2G and half rate, I guess. I'm very appreciative, but my apologies. Perhaps someone switch out to our competitor's network, maybe. Thank you very much, and I hope to have a further chat with you in our roadshows and, of course, the next quarterly announcement. Thank you very much.